This past week, I was kind of impressed by a comment that one of the scholars made having to do with the book of Revelation. He said the book of Revelation is actually a tale of two cities. It's a tale or a story of Babylon and also one of the New Jerusalem. Well, I think we pretty much know what Babylon's all about. We're trying to do away with Babylon and pull everything that we know of from the truth of Yahweh's New Jerusalem. So I'd like to have you go with me, and we'll talk about the New Jerusalem and maybe find some things that we haven't known before. Let's begin by going to the 20th chapter of the book of Revelation. And notice here, beginning with verse 6, here we read, "Blessed and holy is he that is part in the first resurrection. On such, the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of Elohim and of Messiah, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. So it talks here about those that are in the first resurrection. A lot of people don't understand this. They think that the new resurrection will take place and everyone will be made a spirit being. They don't realize that physical life on this earth will continue. It'll go on. There'll be children be born. The wolf shall lie down with the lamb. Little child shall lead them, and so on. But how does this affect us? How does Revelation 20 affect us? Well, I want you to take a look here again at chapter 1 of the book of Revelation. One little verse in there, chapter 1, and we find that is repeated. And in chapter 1 and verse 6, notice here it says, the angels, wait a minute, I'm in the wrong book. Jude is interesting, but Rick, we want to be here in the 6th verse of chapter 1 of Revelation. Talking about Yahweh has made us kings and priests unto Elohim and his Father. To him be glory and dominion forever. We have the opportunity, if our address is the New Jerusalem and not Babylon, that we will be kings and priests in the kingdom. And we find the same thing here in chapter 20 that we just read. But in chapter 5 and verse 10, it says that we shall reign on the earth. Again, it talks about our being kings and priests. The question that has arisen from time to time is, where is this New Jerusalem going to be? It's a big city, 1,500 miles square, and where is it going to be? Well, Revelation 5:10, I want to just read that. It says, and has made us unto our Eloah kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. I say that because we have to understand, even though we're going to be in that New Jerusalem, which we understand is a group of people, spirit beings, that hovers over the earth. It doesn't set down anywhere, but it hovers over the earth. And there's no place that I could find, and I could search and try to find if anyone had said where it would be, on top of the old Jerusalem or what. But apparently, several scholars feel it's going to just hover over Jerusalem, up in the atmosphere over Jerusalem. Well, let's take a look at that and find out a little more. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 15. Here we have Paul talking about the opportunity that we have in the coming kingdom. And here in 1 Corinthians 15, beginning there with verse 50, he talks about something that we have to understand. First of all, that any time one is flesh and blood, they cannot inherit anything in the kingdom. There has to be a change. And you'll find that change in verse 50 says that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of Elohim, neither does corruption inherit incorruption. And then he goes on to say, behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible and shall be changed. If you've ever done a study in the New Testament about the resurrection, you'll find that there is a resurrection from the dead and a resurrection of the dead. Paul makes that an issue and says it's the out resurrection, the resurrection from out of the dead. The dead are still there, but from those that are dead, a few will be raised, and they will be raised to incorruption. Because the second resurrection takes place 1,000 years later. It will not be at the same time when Yahshua comes back. It'll be later. But notice here, he says in verse 53, "For this corruption must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So that this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality. Then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory." And then he goes on to rejoice and says, "O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory?" And he says, "The sting of death is sin. The strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to Elohim, which gives us the victory through our sovereign Yahshua Messiah." And then he encourages us all to be steadfast, unmoving, abounding in Yahweh's work, and knowing that our work and our steadfastness is not in vain. Now we find here that the ones that are made immortal are the ones that are being spoken of here in both the book of Revelation and also here. It explains exactly how it's going to happen. And the interesting point is the Greeks have a philosophy that we leave our body and we go and do something or watch something or whatever, and we come back and get back in our body again. The Bible doesn't say that. The Bible says our body is changed. That this is what it says in verse 52, that our body has to be changed. It's the same body. We don't go anywhere without the body. We are the body. The body is where we are. And our body will be raised incorruptible if we're faithful to Yahweh. Let's go over to the book of Hebrews, chapter 11. Because here we find that the ancient ones, that ancient worthies as they're often called, that they knew about this, but they didn't have the clear message that was given us by the Apostle Paul. Apostle Paul explains exactly how this is going to take place. When Yahshua comes back, those that are his, those that already have the earnest of the Spirit, the small part of that Spirit that was given to them through baptism, through obedience to Yahweh's word, it's almost an affinity with the Holy Spirit that he comes back with and draws these people up to him. In fact, that word almost sounds as if he's drawing people like a magnet and drawing them to him. And as they are changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, they become spirit beings. And it's almost as if they are putting on a coat, and it covers their fleshly body. And this coat then changes them from body, material matter, to the spirit realm. Let's take a look here in the book of Hebrews, and we'll get back to that a little more. Notice here in chapter 11, which is the one chapter that talks about the who's who of Yahweh's people, and we move on down there in chapter 11 to verse 10. Here we're reading about Abraham. Abraham was told to leave Ur of the Chaldees, to leave his family, to leave everything behind, and the Yahweh would tell him where to go. He didn't know where he was going. But by faith, he left Ur of the Chaldees, the moon city. And in verse 10, we find he's looking for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is Elohim. It's, in fact, in verse 9, it says he sojourned in the land, promised as a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles. So he didn't dwell in permanent dwellings. He dwelt in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob. Same thing. the heirs of with him of the same promise. But he was looking for a builder, a city, a builder and maker that Yahweh is, to build a permanent, a place, a city that would be permanent, one he could rely on. And so we find there in this chapter, this is exactly what he is seeking. But he isn't alone in that. Notice in chapter 12, move on over there if you will, and notice in verse 22, the writer of Hebrews says, "But you are come unto Mount Zion and unto the city of the living Elohim, the heavenly Jerusalem." Well, now we're getting into something we can understand, because the city actually is a group of people. And even Yahshua, we find when he was performing miracles, the scripture says in many places that the whole city came out to see what he was doing. They couldn't believe it. So the whole city meant the whole population. But notice here, it says in this 22nd verse, "You are come unto Mount Zion, unto the city of the living Elohim, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and congregation of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to Elohim, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect, and to Yahshua, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks of better things than that of Abel. See that you refuse not him that speaks, for if they escaped not who refused him that spake on earth, how much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaks to us from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth. But now he has promised, saying, yet once more I shake the earth, not only the earth, but also heaven itself." And he goes on to talk about this in 1 Peter as well. So now we understand that the New Jerusalem is a group of spirit beings who are in that first resurrection, and that will be taken up when Yahshua comes back to this earth. So let's go over now to the 13th chapter of Hebrews. And notice here in verse 12 it says, "Wherefore Yahshua also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate." So Yahshua was put to death outside the city of Jerusalem. And that has a significance in that Jerusalem was to be a holy city. And by the symbols, that's why he was put to death outside the gate. "Let us go forth therefore," in verse 13, "unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach." And we are also without the camp. And we sometimes have to be thought of as being a little different, a little weird, using some names that nobody else seems to know. And yet they finally admit that after study, the names Yahweh and Yahshua are indeed the names we should be using. Verse 14, we read that we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. So we also are seeking that city. Let's go over to 2 Peter. 2 Peter. And we find here that not only does John write about this and Paul, but we find that Peter also does. And 2 Peter, notice chapter 1, where in verse 4 it reads, "Whereby we are given, to us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these you might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust." Here Peter simply talks about the divine nature. He's talking about the spirit realm. That's what he's talking about. That is Yahweh's, where Yahweh dwells. And Yahweh, you see, is going to be in that new city, New Jerusalem. Peter says that we are partakers of the divine nature. We are given the down payment of Yahweh's Spirit, as I mentioned before, in baptism. And later on, we are given the fullness of the Spirit and changed to spirit beings. And I want you to go to the third chapter here of 2 Peter. Excuse me. And notice again in verse 10, he talks about the day of Yahweh that is coming as a thief in the night, but the heavens are going to pass away. And in 2 Peter 3:10, he talks about this great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat, and the earth also and the works thereof shall be burned up. If anybody ever thinks that Yahshua's coming is going to be a peaceful, quiet thing, you have to think about what the Bible really is saying. It's going to be a terrible time. But Yahshua will give us the comfort, and Yahweh says that we will have protection. And we don't have to worry about being left behind, as Hal Lindsey writes in his book, because we will be with Yahshua, and his Spirit will be protecting us. He says, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Well, verse 11 then says, seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in a holy conversation and righteousness, looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of Elohim, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for a new heaven and a new earth. So not only is a physical earth going to be changed over, but also the new Jerusalem will be brought to being. And we'll take another look at this as we go to the 20th. Let's go to Isaiah first. In the Old Testament, we have a lot of prophecies that are written for our understanding and our learning. The problem is that we don't always understand exactly how these things are going to fall in place. And so sometimes we don't really understand what we should be doing. But Isaiah, we'll start there with chapter 65 and call attention to some of these things that we'll also find over in the New Testament. In chapter 65, notice as we move on down to verse 17, it's almost as if Peter had written this again. It says, for behold, I create a new heavens and a new earth, for the former shall not be remembered nor come to mind. But be you glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing and her people a joy. And I will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people, and the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying. There shall be no more thence an infant of days, nor an old man that has not fulfilled his days. For the child shall die 100 years old, but the sinner, being 100 years old, shall be accursed. And they shall build houses and inhabit them. So now he's talking about the physical people. They're building houses. They're going to live in them. They're going to plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. It won't be planting trees, planting fruit trees, planting vineyards, and then being chased out of there and have somebody else take over and benefit from the work that the builders and the planters have done. He says in verse 22, they shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands. And he goes on to talk about these things. But I think what is interesting, move on down to verse 25. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the bullock. That's rather interesting. The lion is going to eat grass and forage on herbs and grass and trees, leaves and so on. There's going to be a real change when the new earth is established. And we read, the dust shall be the serpent's meat. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all mine holy mountain. So here Yahweh tells about this. Let's go over now to the chapter in Revelation, chapter 21. And there we find almost the same thing, but a little different explanation. We have the advantage, brethren, of seeing what the Old Testament people read and what they understood. Now we have a clarification in a lot of these things that we can understand much clearer. No wonder in the book of Hebrews in chapter 11, The end verse says that they without us should not be made perfect. Notice here, and we're in Revelation 21. Verse 1 says, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away. Now he's saying the same thing we read in the book of Isaiah. And you can also find it in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 30, and so on. And he says, and there was no more sea. Now, why is that important? Why is this earth without the oceans? What happened to them? Well, scholars feel that probably was going to happen, that it'll be a canopy of water vapor all around the earth, like it was at creation time, before Adam and Eve partook of the fruit and were chased out and the great flood came along finally. And that it'll be like a greenhouse effect on the entire earth. And the water will be ice crystals and clouds and mist and so on to filter off the sun's rays. So there is no more sea. So this tells us that this is the after the millennium has started. There's no more sea. And the Bible also talks about the high mountain shall be made low, the low land shall be raised up, and the earth will be leveled. Not the big deep valleys and the large mountains like we have today. But I want you to notice especially, as long as we're here, verse 2. And it says, and I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from Yahweh out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Now we're reading about the people that are going to be at the wedding supper. We'll see them in a minute back in the 19th chapter in verse 7 of Revelation, where the wedding supper takes place. But here, this is a little later, and we find it says that this city is as a bride adorned for her husband. And verse 3 says, I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of Elohim is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and Elohim himself shall be with them and be their mighty one. What does that tell us? That when Yahshua came, he was known as the Emmanuel, El with us. Here is a fulfillment of this when Yahweh makes his throne, his headquarters of this vast universe, right here on this earth. Well, it won't be right on the earth because he'll be in the New Jerusalem, which doesn't come down to the earth. But we find that he is going to, in fact, it's called the Tabernacle of Elohim, and he will dwell with his people. That makes it rather interesting. Let's go over to chapter 3 in the book of Revelation here. Rather interesting how Yahweh will bring in some new thing, and at first you don't really understand it, and as you keep reading it, tells a story all about it of its own. Here in chapter 11, verse 12, Yahshua says, he that overcomes, I will make a pillar in the temple of my Elohim. He shall go no more out. I will write upon him the name of my Elohim, the name of the city of my Elohim, which is New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my Elohim, and I will write upon him my new name. His new name you'll find in Jeremiah 23, and I think it's verse 6. And his name is going to be Yahweh Tzidkenu, Yahweh my righteousness, because this will be a completion of Yahweh, of Yahshua and the Yahweh, ruling over this earth, putting down all rebellion, putting down all sin, and everything will be made perfect. Yahweh can't dwell where any sin exists. He simply can't do it, because what he would do is burn up that sin by his very presence. But anyway, notice it's the New Jerusalem which comes down out of heaven from Yahweh. Now, some people think, well, if it's coming down, then it has to settle someplace. But the scholars have pointed out it doesn't settle anywhere. It just stays there. Let's go to the 21st chapter here again. And notice that in verse 9, one of the seven angels comes to John and had seven vials full of the seven last plagues. And it talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great high mountain and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from Elohim. What does that really mean? Does that mean it comes down to this earth? No, scholars have admitted that what it's really saying is that this Jerusalem is actually from the power of Yahweh. It comes from Him. His Holy Spirit has made these people changed from mortal to immortal, from corruption to incorruption. And they all are this, make up this great city. Verse 11 says, they have the glory of Elohim. Well, the glory of Elohim is His Holy Spirit, isn't it? Bright, shining light. And it says, having the glory of Elohim, and her light was like the stone most precious, even like jasper stone, clear as crystal. Which is interesting because you find that this wall in verse 12 is clear crystal. And you can see right through it. The bright light shines out from this city. It has a great wall high and had 12 gates. And the gates, at the gates, 12 angels. And the names are on which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. And over in chapter 22 and verse 12, or 14, the only way you get in that city is to go through one of those gates. There's no gates for Gentiles, no gates for sinners, only the 12 tribes of Israel. Now notice as we continue looking at this, I won't have time to read the whole thing, but I'm always just kind of amazed when I read chapters 21, 22, and even back to 19, because you find this city described here, how big it is, and it'll be a great, great thing. The city is big, but the New Jerusalem, of course, actually covers miles. I don't want to get into discussion on that, but let's go over here to the, chapter 21 and verse 21. We find there are 12 gates, and the 12 gates are 12 pearls. Every several gate was of one pearl. There's a statement that Yahshua makes about someone finding the pearl of great price. Some scholars think that each one of us should have a pearl, and that pearl is the gate to the kingdom, to be in that New Jerusalem. Well, every several gate was of one pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, as it were transparent glass. So now we see this bright, blinding light that Yahweh is and Yahshua are the ones going to make their headquarters in this New Jerusalem. And it's made of clear clear stones, transparent, I meant. Transparent like glass. You can see through it. Verse 22, John says, I saw no temple therein, for Yahweh El Shaddai and the Lamb are the temple of it. And the city had no need of the sun. So apparently this New Jerusalem hovers over the old Jerusalem in that area, over Israel. And it says it had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it. For the glory of Elohim did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. Now apparently this New Jerusalem, we have access to the earth too, because notice in verse 24 it talks about the nations shall walk in the light of this temple, the new city, and the kings of the earth do bring their glory and honor into it. So they do have access to this part of the city. But the gate should not be shut at all by day, and there shall be no night there. And they shall bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. And there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defiles, neither whatsoever that works abomination or makes a lie. But these things which are written, these names that are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So here we find that this is talking about the New Jerusalem. Let's go over to Galatians chapter 4. And this is one of the reasons why people believe that New Jerusalem doesn't really settle down anywhere upon the earth, but stays hovering over the earth. I haven't found any place where that they actually say it will settle on the earth. But chapter 4, and notice, we should start over here about verse 22, where Abraham had two sons. One son by a bond woman, a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh. That was Hagar, wasn't it? Hagar's son Ishmael. But he of the free woman was by promise, which things are an allegory. In other words, the birth of Ishmael and Isaac was actually a sign to people that this is going to be followed up later on, and here we are. They are an allegory, for there are two covenants. One from the Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Hagar. For this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answers to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. Now, and we find that, but Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. The point that is often made is that when Paul writes about the Jerusalem, which is above, he's talking about the spirit realm. And he says it is now. He doesn't say it's going to be. It's already above the earth. But of course, we know that when Yahshua walked this earth, he was able to change himself from being flesh and bone. And he would suddenly appear, transform himself before the people, before his disciples. And then when he was on the way to walking and so on, he would suddenly just disappear. He could speed up his body, his fleshly body, and disappear. But you notice when you read about Yahshua, he had no blood in his body. In Luke 24, talks about that. He said to Doubting Thomas, reach forth your finger and feel, for a flesh and bone has no body like you see me, or a spirit has no flesh and bone like you see me have. But he could change from spirit to flesh and bone whenever he wanted to. And we find that in the book of Isaiah, where you'll hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk you in it. I want you to go from Galatians 4, go over to the book of Revelation again. This time we'll go to chapter 2. In chapter 2, you'll notice here just one verse here in verse 7. We're in Revelation 2:7. He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the assemblies. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of Elohim. Now this is the tree of life, and we find that it's being spoken of here in chapter 2 as being already in existence. Again, scholars feel this is probably a spiritual thing, but it's again referring to the things that are still coming. Now notice, in that second chapter as well, I lost my place. Notice verse 11. It says, he that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says unto the assemblies. He that overcomes shall not be hurt of the second death. And we read the second death is the lake of fire over in the 20th chapter of Revelation. And so it's saying that the physical harm that could result from fire won't hurt you if you are made a spirit being. Because spirit is primarily comprised of energy. It's not matter. Energy slowed down can be changed into matter, and matter can be speeded up and changed into energy. Well, that's another study. Let's go to Revelation 21. And we didn't quite finish up here. But you'll notice here in, let's see. I guess we already did. Move on to chapter 22. Here we have the water of life, clear as crystal in chapter 22 and verse 1. It says it's proceeding out of the throne of Elohim and of the Lamb. You know, there's quite a controversy going on over in Israel right now saying that the Fort Antona is what they're looking at, and that's what they claim to be where the temple stood. But even the temple that was standing back there in Jerusalem at that time had the Gihon River brook, really. Water came out of the bottom of where the tabernacle was built, or the temple, really. And there's nothing like that in there now, but they have it all covered up. And some of the scholars feel that the real Temple Mount has yet to be found and yet to be built. That it actually is about 600 feet from where the Fort Antona was, where the Roman soldiers were, some 50,000 Roman soldiers. But the water of life here, again, you know, is patterned after what is there or was there at Jerusalem, where the water of life, clear as crystal, proceeds out of the throne of Elohim and the Lamb. And then we have, in verse 2, we have trees growing in this special place. Some of these things are hard to understand. Some people feel they're mostly allegories and so on. But we do know that here we are in chapter 22, in verse 4. It says in verse 4 that Yahshua's name should be in our foreheads. And you find that verse 5, it says there is no night there. This is repeated again. And they need no candle, neither light of the sun, nor Yahweh Elohim gave him light, and they shall reign forever and ever. So here again, it's talking about the bride, the new Jerusalem, talking about the people that are going to be there, ruling with Yahshua. Notice it says in verse 6, these sayings are faithful and true, and Yahweh Elohim, Yahweh Elohim of the holy prophet sent his angel to show unto his servants the things which must shortly be done. And he says, behold, I come quickly. And so on. I want you to go over to the book of Ezekiel, chapter 10. In chapter 10, this is rather an interesting chapter because it talks about seeing Yahweh, how the glory departs here in this chapter. The glory departs from the temple. And you'll notice as we look at this, it gives a description of what Yahweh's entourage is like. It describes the surroundings that he has there. So we're looking at the Yahweh's temple. What Ezekiel saw. He said, I looked, and behold, in the firmament there was above the head of the cherubims, there appeared over them as it were a sapphire stone, as the appearance of the likeness of a throne. You can read that self same thing in the book of Isaiah, talking about the stones that are the same as we read here in the book of Ezekiel. And we just have already seen that in the book of Revelation. Notice verse 2, he spoke unto the man clothed with linen and said, go in between the wheels, even under the cherub, and fill thine hand with coals of fire from between the cherubims, and scatter them over the city. And he went in my sight. Now the cherubim stood on the right side of the house when the man went in, and the cloud filled the inner court. Then the glory of Yahweh went up from the cherub, and stood over the threshold of the house, and the house was filled with the cloud, and the court was full of the brightness of Yahweh's glory. Now we understand a little bit more about what happened with Moses when he was leading the children of Israel out of Egypt, and there was a pillar of fire by night and a cloudy pillar by day to guide them. We see now that this was Yahweh's glory. Verse 5, and the sound of the cherubim's wings was heard even to the outer court as the voice of the Almighty El when he speaks. And it came to pass that when he had commanded the man clothed with linen, saying, take fire from between the wheels, from between the cherubims, then he went in and stood beside the wheels. One cherub stretched forth his hand and between the cherubims into the fire that was between the cherubims, and took thereof and put it into the hands of him that was clothed with linen, who took it and went out. And there appeared in the cherubims the form of a man's hand under the wings. And when I looked, behold, four wheels by the cherubims, one wheel by one cherub, and another wheel by another cherub, and the appearance of the wheels was as the color of beryl stone. I see here that Bullinger says it was a stone of Tarshish. Well, anyway, verse 10, and as for their appearance, they four had one likeness, as if a wheel had been in the midst of a wheel. Have you tried to picture what this is all about? It's very complicated. People have tried to draw this and sketch it out, and it gets a little bit difficult. Notice it says in verse 11, when they went upon their four sides. They turned not as they went, but to the place whither the head looked, they followed it, and they turned not as they went. And their whole body and their backs and their hands and their wings and their wheels were full of eyes round about, even the wheels that had, or that they four had. As for the wheels, it was cried unto them in my hearing, O wheel, and every one had four faces. The four faces was that of a cherub, the second face as a man, the third the face of a lion, the fourth as the face of an eagle. And the cherubims were lifted up. This is a living creature that I saw by the river Kebar. And when the cherubims went, the wheels went by them. And when the cherubims lifted their wings to mount up from the earth, the same wheels also turned not from beside them. When they stood, these stood. And when they were lifted up, these lifted up themselves. Also, for the spirit of the living creatures was in them. Then the glory of Yahweh departed from off the threshold of the house and stood over the cherubim. That was a lot of reading to get you down to verse 18 here, but this is telling about Yahweh's spirit leaving the temple. And it's a play of something that we see over here in Matthew, the 23rd chapter, where Yahshua gives a talk, and I think it's eight woes that he talks about, the scribes, Pharisees, and hypocrites. But I want you to notice in chapter 23 of Matthew, the last verse says, not the last verse, verse 38 says, behold, your house is left unto you desolate. Interestingly enough, Bullinger makes a note, and he says, your house, very emphatic. At the beginning of Yahshua's ministry, it was my Father's house, John 2:16. But at the end, after his rejection, it was your house. Yahweh's spirit was no longer in the temple. And that was even before Yahshua died. Verse 39 says, I say unto you, you shall not see me henceforth till you shall say, blessed is he that comes in the name of Yahweh. Back in those days, they probably weren't even using Yahweh's name. In fact, Psalm 137, I think it is, talks about by the rivers of Babylon there, we sat down and wept. They wouldn't sing Yahweh's song in the strange land. But here we find that the New Jerusalem is actually a group of saints that hover over the land of Israel. And you have to think about what this really is talking about, this New Jerusalem. It's Yahweh's headquarters. It's where Yahshua and he live. They stay there. We also find that the saints are there, the spirit beings. And from there, the law is going out all over this entire universe. And this is the headquarters where Yahweh operates and keeps the universe together. And we are destined to go and be a part of that new Jerusalem. So I pray, brethren, that we'll consider some of these things, because the glories that we kind of see through a glass darkly now are greater than we ever could anticipate. So make sure that your reservation is for the New Jerusalem.